before we can discuss self-realization, so we need to articulate a sense of self. We need to try to understand what constitutes our core self, who we are. This is a question which basically is of universal interest. General philosophy throughout the millennia, to this very day, my impression is, deals with this topic. Our concern and focus is going to be the Torah's approach to this. So Pasuk in Iyov, the Pasuk says, Or ubaso tal visheni, uba atzomos vegidim tesachacheni. You clothe me, you, capital Y, you clothe me with skin and flesh, you cover me with bones and sinews. Again, Or ubaso tal visheni, uba atzomos vegidim tesachacheni. You clothe me with skin and flesh. You cover me with bones and sinews. So who's the me? It's not the skin. It's not the flesh. Who's the me? The Arizal's famous Talmud, the one who is the conduit for so much of the Arizal's Torah that has reached us, has a very, very famous fundamental word called Shari Kedusha. So he begins Shari Kedusha touching on this theme which is preoccupying us tonight. And he writes, I'll just read share a few lines. Noda el ba'le mada. People of knowledge know. Ki gufa odom einenu ha'odom atzmo. People of knowledge realize that the body of a person is not the person. Because the body of the person is referred to as his or her flesh, his or her body. And he cites this pasuk from Iyov that we just looked at. Or ubaso tal visheni, uba atzomos vegidim tesachacheni. The Chaim Vital quotes a pasuk from Sefer Shmos. The context is the Torah is talking, I think, about the Shemen HaMishcha. So the Torah says that the Shemen HaMishcha, which was used to anoint Aharon and his sons, was used to anoint all the kelim, all the utensils of the Mishkan. So you're not allowed to. It's one of the lavin in the Torah. One is not allowed to take that Shemen HaMishcha and anoint someone for whom it's not intended. It's intended to anoint a melech, to anoint a Kohen Gadol, but other than that, it can't be used. So how does the Torah formulate, how does the Torah phrase that love? So the Torah says, Al Bisar Odom Lo Yisach. The Torah doesn't say, Al Odom Lo Yisach. The Torah doesn't say, don't, again, use this oil, don't apply this oil to any other person. It says, no, don't apply this oil to the flesh of a person. The same point, that the flesh, that's not me, that's my flesh, that's not me. Nimtza, says Reb Chaim Vital, ha'odam hu ha'pnimius. Apparently the self, the real person is what's inside the body. Abul Haguf, hu inyan levush echad. The body is a garment. It's clothing. Tislabesh bo hanefesh hasiflas hashihi ha'odam atzmo. And the person's nefesh, the person's soul, is clothed in the body, but that's the person. So when we talk about ourselves, so we're talking about our nefoshos, our souls. In a similar vein, you find that there's a fascinating Rashi in Masechta Sanhedrin. You want Masechta Sanhedrin is dealing with the obligation of Achmal Nitzlan, you see someone drowning. So the Gemara says, how do you know? What's the source in the Torah that a person can't stand apathetically by? the person is obligated to save the drowning individual. So the Gemara is two psukim. One of those two psukim is Hashav Teshiva Malachicha, which is the pasuk of Hashavas Aveda. The same way, if you're walking up the staircase, you're coming up in the elevator, you see a wallet, so you have to pick the wallet up, and you have to fulfill the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. So too, Nachman Litzlan, you see a person who's drowning, so it's a mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. So Rashi sort of spells out what's implicit in the Gemara and says you have to return the person's body to him or to her. Hashavas gufo lo. So what are you returning? Again, when you find the wallet, so you're returning the wallet to the person. You're returning the wallet to the rightful owner. So to whom, what are you returning? And to whom are you returning when you save a life? So Rashi says, you're restoring the body to the person. Again, that same point. It's a little bit more subtle here, but that same point of the Chaim Vital. So oneself is the nefesh. The self is spiritual. The self, not physical, not a temporal, not something temporal. Very often, we don't recognize this. We don't feel it. And the reason for that is that we all have a Yetzirah. Ever since the chait of Adam HaRishon, we experience the Yetzirah internally. The Yetzirah is, say, that force within us which is attracted to Olam Hazeh values and commodities. The Yetzirah is what's responsible for us being interested in creaturely comforts, being preoccupied with petty concerns, being overly focused on the physical. Since the chait of Adam HaRishon, before Adam HaRishon sinned, so the Yetzirah was something external. It was sort of almost something that a person had to convince himself or herself to do. There was something contrarian about it. After the chait of Adam HaRishon, so human nature changed, and now we feel and we experience the Yetzirah internally. So as a result, we experience, again, these urges, these concerns as being instinctive urges, as being natural concerns. And that can easily, and often does, delude us into thinking that that's who we are. That my interest in the creaturely comforts, my preoccupation with petty concerns, my being overly focused on the mundane, I can easily slip into the mistake of thinking that's me. And as a result, we naturally want to accommodate that impulse or those impulses of the Yetzirah. Sometimes the Yetzirah goes out of bounds halachically. There are obviously countless examples one could give, but just to give one or two, just to illustrate, to concretize a little bit what we're talking about. Let's say you have a Kohen who's very drawn to studying medicine. But there's no way he can complete the course in anatomy within and adhere to halachas of a Kohen avoiding being metameh lames. Let's say you have someone who's not a Kohen, the individual's not a Kohen, but the individual's been told by the Rav that, you know, you have to take a Shomer Shabbos residency. That's what the Rav instructed the individual. And it just so happens that the field of interest in medicine doesn't offer a Shomer Shabbos residency. So we often can experience this as a real conflict. Because we experience it as a conflict between ourselves and our religious commitment. That what I want, what self-realization for me entails, albeit I'm a Kohen, is to go to medical school. Albeit that maybe I'm not a Kohen, but I want to go into this subspecialty of medicine, which doesn't have a Shomer Shabbos residency. So I feel that myself is being suppressed by my religious commitment. And it creates conflict within us. As real as that experience can be, and as formidable as that challenge can be, if we take a step back, so not only do we realize that what the right decision is obvious, but we also realize that it's not really a conflict. The real self is the neshama. For the neshama, self-realization means to come as close as possible to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through His Torah and Mitzvahs. That scenario, those scenarios that we described, and again, illustrative of countless other scenarios, we can all come up with scenarios from our own private lives, doesn't really involve any conflict. The real self can never, ever be suppressed by one's commitment to Torah and Mitzvahs. The real self can never be suppressed by one's religious commitment. Now, the fact that the real person, the real you, the real me, is the neshama, the real person is his or her neshama, that doesn't imply uniformity. The same way physically no two people are totally identical, so the physical often mirrors and reflects the spiritual. Hashem Baruch Hu created the world that it's hard for us to make the leap sometimes and think directly about spiritual matters. So Hashem Baruch Hu created the world in such a way that the physical is a mirror, is symmetrical in many, many ways to the spiritual. So just as physically no two people are identical, no two people are alike, right? Parents can, even identical twins, so the parents can eventually tell them apart. So too, spiritually, no two people are identical either. So the fact that the real person, the real you, is your nefesh, in no way precludes or even blurs individuality. Maybe just to give a couple of indications, reflections of that fact. My father was fond of citing a Rambam from the Perush HaMishnayos at the end of Maseches Makos. The end of Maseches Makos is where the famous statement of Rav Chanina ben Akashi appears. Omer Rav Chanina ben Akashi, what's like Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Zakos is Yisrael? Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to bestow merit upon the Jewish people. The Fichach here will end Torah mitzvahs. And that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us such a big Torah and so many mitzvahs. So if your professor will walk in tomorrow and say, you know, I really love you and I really want to bestow the best on you, so instead of giving you 20 pages to read for the next class, I'm going to give you 200 pages to read for the next class, and instead of assigning a 5-page term paper, I'm going to assign a 20-page term paper, I'm not sure that you would lead the vote for professor of the year. So what does it mean? Zakos Torah mitzvahs. He should have been memai Torah mitzvahs. So this question within Rav Chanina ben Akashia occasions many different beautiful insights and explanations. But the Rambam's is as follows. The Rambam says it's an ikar, it's a fundamental principle that in addition to our obligation to fulfill all the mitzvahs that are incumbent upon us, for a person to be zolche to olam haba, for a person to merit chaya olam haba, at least once in his or her life, the person has to do something totally lishma, totally for its own sake. I'm not doing it for any ulterior motive. I'm not doing it to get a reward. I'm not doing it to impress anyone. I'm not even doing it to impress HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm doing it because it's the right thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the right thing. No cheshbonos. No personal calculations. No, not even a tinge of selfish or self-centered motivation. Says the Rambam, because there are so many different types of mitzvahs in the Torah, so everyone, almost inevitably, will find that mitzvah that he or she, at least once, in the course of his or her life, will fulfill the Shema. Right? So the mashal, the correct mashal to Rav Chanan and Akasha says is not what I said before. The correct mashal is, let's say, if you have a catalog, and the catalog only has 5 course offerings. Okay, there's a pretty good chance that there may not be any course in the course listing that excites you. But if instead of having 5 course listings, there's 613 course listings, and such a variety of topics and such a variety of disciplines, so then it's inevitable that if you'll open yourself up to it, you're going to find something in that course catalog which is going to excite you. You're going to find something in that course catalog that you're not just going to do because, oh, it satisfies a requirement. No, it's something I'm truly, genuinely interested to do. I want to do this. So that's the mashal. The analog to that is, we're all different. We all have different kochos hanefesh. We all have different strengths. The common denominator of which is that we all can and therefore have to fulfill all mitzvahs that are incumbent upon us. But within that, there's also, again, there's individuality. We have different strengths, different skill sets. We naturally gravitate towards different mitzvahs. Some people, they get involved in the community, so they organize Bikkur Cholim. Why do they organize Bikkur Cholim as opposed to volunteering for the Chevra Kadisha, as opposed to organizing Shi'urim, as opposed to maybe giving Shi'urim? It's just a natural nitiya. That's their natural inclination. Another person, taka, does volunteer for the Chevra Kadisha. Another person, taka, does give shiurim in adult education. Another person is gadol ha'ma'aseh yosem and ha'osem. Maybe doesn't give the shiurim, but maybe is the catalyst to arrange for shiurim to happen. We're all different. There is individuality. This is the same way. There's physical individuality. There's spiritual individuality. And the Torah caters to that. Everyone's going to find, again, we all commit ourselves and we all look to be as scrupulous as possible about every single mitzvah that's incumbent upon us. But within that, we're all going to gravitate. We're all going to have a mitzvah that is our ticket together with all other mitzvahs, but is that extra ticket that's also necessary for Olam Haba. A reflection again that even once we recognize that the real self is spiritual, we're still talking about individuality. Another expression of that. The Ramban, if you take a look, Parshas Naso in Sefer Bamidbar has more psukim than any other parsha in the Chumash. How so? Why is that? Because Parshas Naso describes the Chanukas HaMishkan, describes the consecration of the Mishkan, and it describes how on the first 12 days of the month of Nisan, each of the Nisiyim of his respective shevet brought korbanos as part of the inauguration of the Mishkan. They brought the identical korbanos. This is the Kriyas HaTorah for Hanukkah. We read it on Hanukkah as the Kriyas HaTorah. So they brought identical korbanos. So really, all the Torah had to do was tell us on the first day, Nachshon Bar Aminadav, of Shevet Yehuda, offered the following korbanos, and then all the Torah had to say, and similarly, on the following 11 days, the following Messiah brought the identical korbanos. But the Torah doesn't do that. Instead, the Torah repeats, Ta'echa ben Bokor, etc. It goes through the whole list of korbanos. So why such an arichus? Every word, every letter, every tag, every crown on top of the letters of the Chumash is so significant. So why does the Torah pass up this obvious chance to economize? So the Ramban has two remarkable pshatim. Each one is remarkable in the order. I don't remember the order in which he lists them. The second of the two is the one that's more germane to us now, but maybe we'll mention both. The first one is, the Ramban says that the Torah is teaching a lesson in Kavod Abrius. It's true that Nachshon ben Aminadav went on the first day, but the Torah wants to devote as much space to describing what every other Nasi did. Every other Nasi was also motivated, also came with pure kavanas. So to say ditto on days 2 through 12 for the next 11 Nisiyim would have been to shortchange their Kavod Abrius. So because of that, the Torah devotes an extra chveis, I don't know, 60, 70 psukim for Kavod Abrius, the Kavod Abrius of the other 11 Nisiyim. But then the Ramban has another pshat, fascinating pshat. Franz von der Brucher used to quote this also in context of that Rambam and Persian Mishnayos that we were just looking at. He says, externally, they brought the identical korbanos. Externally, everything was the same. But every Nasi did it with his own personal kavanah. The subjective component of the Hakramas Korbanos was not the same. If the Torah would have said, this is what Nachshon brought on day one, then the Torah would have said, and ditto for the other 11 Nisim on days 2 through 12, so we would have thought that everyone was a carbon copy of each other. And the Torah repeats it by saying, no, did each one bring a par? Did each one bring a bull? Yes. But that doesn't mean that it was identical, because each one did it with his own personal stamp. The subjective element, the subjective dimension of the mitzvah, which is an intrinsic part of it, was not the same. Because everyone brings, again, his or her own, again, subjective dimension, component, experience to the objective performance of the mitzvah. Maybe one last illustration, the concretization of what we're talking about in terms of individuality, even once we recognize that the self is spiritual. The Rabbi Levine, the legendary tzaddik of Yerushalayim, so perhaps was best known for his devotion during the years of the British Mandate to all the prisoners of the mandate who were languishing in British jails. His mesiras nefesh for them was beyond belief. How did his involvement? How did he become involved with that population to begin with? So the British, not for any noble reasons, for cynical reasons, thought that if they would have a chaplain for all the Jews that they had incarcerated, that they would be less likely to make problems for them, and they'd have a more docile prison population. So they went to Rav Kook, who at the time was the chief rabbi and recognized by the British as such. And they asked them to recommend someone for that post of being chaplain for the Jewish inmates. And Rav Kook recommended his Talmud Chaver, he recommended Rav Avi Lavir. And Rav Kook told, and Rav Kook subsequently commented, I guess when asked, why he chose Rav Avi Lavir for that task, said, because I could see that involvement with Chesed was the tikkun for his neshama. That involvement for Chesed was the way his individual neshama was going to be perfected. So the story tells us incredible things about Rav Kook's vision. One wonders where Rav Kook bought his glasses and would like to frequent the same optometry store. But it also speaks to this issue that we're talking about in terms of the individuality of nefoshos, spiritual individuality that we all have. One of the biggest challenges, maybe in a certain sense, one can say the biggest challenge we all have at your age, the young population is a time when when you're really meeting this obligation and challenge head on, is to cultivate the self-knowledge to identify one's spiritual individuality and to identify one's particular constellation of Kochos HaNefesh and to know how they're best used and how they're best applied within Torah and Mitzvahs. The Mishnah in Avos tells us, "Ezeu Gibo Akovish Es Yitzchak," who's a mightier person who can conquer, can suppress as appropriate the Yitzchak. Ezel Osher Asamech Uchalka, who's wealthy, a person who's content with what she has. Ezel Mechubar Amchavim Sabiyas, who's a person who's truly dignified and honorable, a person who honors others. What's the common denominator of each of those definitions of Kovish Yitzro, of Samech Bechalko, of Machabes Abias? I think that this observation also I first heard from my father, is that we think of each of these terms as depending upon some kind of externalities. Ezel Oshir depends upon how much money a person has in the bank. Ezel Gibor depends upon how much muscle I have in my body. And Ezel Mechuba depends upon whether or not people give me kavod or they don't give me kavod. And the Mishnah says that's not true. The Mishnah says all these things are inner-directed. All these things are independent of externalities. They're independent of whether or not my job is lucrative, my job isn't lucrative, whether or not I was born into a wealthy family, I wasn't born into a wealthy family. It's independent of how much muscle mass I have. It's independent of whether or not I'm on the receiving end of public recognition, public accolades. You know, they're all interdirected. The true self is spiritual. So self-realization, self-attainment, self-realization is Ein Hadavar Tolui Ela Bi. Ein Hadavar Tolui Ela Bi means A, that imposes a sense of responsibility upon me, but B, it also says that I'm not dependent upon anyone else. I'm not dependent on anyone else to be a Gibor. I'm not dependent on anyone else to be an Oshir. I'm not dependent upon anyone else to be a Mechubar. I'm not dependent upon anyone else to be me. Ein Adol Atoli Ela Bi.
I'd
like to read you a few lines from the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam is talking about the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. The goal for all of us to try to that we all pursue. A person who's preoccupied with Torah so that one can receive reward, or that one can avert punishment, not because I'm intimidated by the chlanul etzlan, the prospect of punishment, but lo lekabel schar, nor am I responding to the incentive of reward. Elam etnei ahavas adom kol ha'aretz shetziva ba hareza osei ba lishma. If a person is motivated just by his love of the master of the world, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who commanded it, such a person is being osek bo lishma. Now listen especially to this next halacha, which is the concluding halacha of Hilchos Tshuva and Sefer HaMada of the Rambam. And there's a profound dialectic which is encapsulated in these words of the Rambam. Listen carefully. Davar yadua uborvar. It's something which is well known and clear. It's not something you can quibble about. This is something, it's an idea that's very compelling. Dovo yodua ubor. She'ein ahavas HaKadosh Baruch Hu nikshar es belibo shel adam. For love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be bound up in a person's mind, out, that doesn't happen ad she'yishke bo tomid karoli. A person has to be constantly immersed in his, her pursuit of Avas Hashem. Now, listen to these next five words. Again, recognizing that obviously this is a very high goal, one that right now is out of our reach, but it's what we pursue. V'yazov kol shavu'odlam. That ultimately Avas Hashem is attained only when a person pushes aside everything else in the world. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands us in the Torah and says, B'chol levavcha u'chol nafsha. So there's a profound dialectic here. Self-realization means the self is the nefesh. Self-realization is to come as close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as possible through his Torah mitzvahs. There's no greater self-realization than a person who is genuinely Oev Es Hashem. But says the Rambam, and here's the dialectic, hear this, please. How is self-realization, again, in the form of that Kirvas Elokim, in the form of that Avas Hashem, how is that self-realization accomplished? How is it attained? Through self-sacrifice. What we initially experience as self-sacrifice, what's the self-sacrifice? Countless examples. Again, we gave the example of the Kohen who gives up on his dream of medical school. But the non-Kohen who gives up on the dream of a particular medical specialty because there's no Shomer Shabbos residency available there. But we can all provide our own personal examples. And we experience it at the time as self-sacrifice. We do. Our true self is not sufficiently developed for us to feel or experience it otherwise. It is experienced as self-sacrifice. It's experience that I'm giving something up. I'm giving something up. If I'm tired and I haven't done ma'ariv yet, and I push myself to done ma'ariv, and it's more I push myself to try to done ma'ariv kavan before going to sleep. So I experience that as self-sacrifice, because what I think I really want to do is I think I really want to collapse into bed and go to sleep. So I experience it because I'm on not yet a high or a highest level that I could be, that hopefully maybe someday we all will be on. So I experience that as self-sacrifice. What is it really? It's not really self-sacrifice. What we experience is self-sacrifice. What we experience as Mesiras Nefesh with Torah and Mitzvahs, and again, genuinely, we're not hallucinating. Ba'asher anachnu sham, it is self-sacrifice. It is Mesiras Nefesh. It is challenging, and the challenge can be formidable. But in reality, Yoshe Bashamayim, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's vantage point, what it really is a self-investment. What it really is self-development. What it really is self-realization. It's really self-realization. And that's a profound, profound dialectic that we should be aware of. And the more we're aware of it, the more it helps sustain us for, again, what we do experience at the time as self-sacrifice, as Mesiras Nefesh. That there is a corollary to this lifestyle which ensues. When we recognize that the true self is the Nefesh and all the implications of that for what self-realization really means. Maybe we'll try to identify that corollary as follows. The Mishnah at the end of Brachos tells us that the Chayav Odom L'Vorech Al Haro'a K'Shem Shem L'Vorech Al Haro'a. That Rachmana Litzlan, if a person receives bad tidings, person is informed, Rachmana Litzlan, of the passing of an immediate relative. So the person has to make a bracha, k'shem shem b'varach al ha'tova. The same way a person makes a bracha if he, she is the recipient of good tidings. You bought a lottery ticket and you check what the winning number is, and lo and behold, it's your number. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, kishem, just as. So the Gemara says, what do you mean just as? You don't make the same bracha. Rachmana Litzlan, in the first scenario of ro'a, of what we experience as bad, tragic news, so the bracha is, v'ruch ata Hashem, v'ken melech olam, dayan ha'emes. In the event of what we experience as good, welcome, wonderful news, so the bracha, if it affects not only oneself but others as well, is baruch atah Hashem lekedem al kolam hatov v'hameter. So what does it mean kishem? So the Gemara says no. The equation is not in terms of that it's the same bracha, but it's the same attitude. And specifically, the two words the Gemara says are lekebulinhu b'simcha. You have to receive the news, the tidings, be it Rachmana Litzlan, what we experience from our vantage point as Ro'ah, or what we experience from our vantage point as Tova, you have to receive it with the same attitude. What does Simcha mean? So we would translate joyously. But if you look at Rashi on that Gemara, in Masachas Brachos, so Rashi translates that the Simcha, Rashi gives a two-word definition, explanation. He says, B'lev of Shalem. Wholeheartedly. The Gemara doesn't mean that Rachmana Litzlan, a person receives tragic news, it doesn't mean that a person dances. It doesn't mean that a person breaks out into joyous song and dance. But what it does mean is that a person realizes that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it, as much as we experience it as something tragic and devastating, but we know that it's the right thing. And because of that, whether the person is the recipient of good news, wonderful news, or Rachmana Litzlan, the recipient of bad, tragic news, either way, is a certain sense of equanimity, the lev of shalem, wholeheartedness. There's a certain sense of equanimity with which a person receives that news. So Rashi is giving us a very beautiful and profound definition of simcha. Rashi is telling us that, again, we generally translate simcha, I don't know, more symptomatically and more externally. That a person is joyous, rapturous. And Rashi says, no, simcha means this sense of serenity which a person can only have when a person knows that things are as they should be. When are we not the simcha? When we're frustrated, we're angry, we're torn, we're conflicted. What's the common denominator to all those situations? Frustrated, angry, conflicted. Things are not as they should be. I'm frustrated because I want this, I don't have this. I'm angry because this happened to me, I don't want that happened to me. A person is besimcha when he, she, feels that things are as they should be. For things to be as they should be, so that's a partnership between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of what happens to us, and we're in charge of what we do. So we can be besimcha about what's out of our control, because that's in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's control, HaKol Bidei Shamayim. So we receive good news, or Rachmana Litzlan, we receive bad news. A person can be besimcha. A person can have that sense of serenity. Again, it doesn't preclude the crying, it doesn't preclude the mourning, it doesn't anesthetize one against the pain and the grief of the bad news, but alongside that, there's a sense of serenity, of the lev of shalem, that things are as they should be. But for a person to feel that way all the way, I also have to know that hakol bidei shamayim chutz me'ira shamayim. I also have to know that what I'm doing is right. A person pursues self-realization in the sense that we spoke about, that we've been talking about. The real you, the real me, is the nefesh. Self-realization is that kirvas elokim through his Torah and mitzvahs. It's something which doesn't depend upon externalities. It's something which is inner directed. There's the dialectic of self-sacrifice is what ultimately yields self-realization. A person lives a life like that, a person's got to always be the simcha. Because a person's got to have that sense, that's that deep-seated sense of serenity and equanimity that things are as they should be. A person goes to sleep at night having lived the day the way he, she should. A person goes to sleep with a sense of serenity. If you ever seen pictures of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, so in virtually every picture of him that exists, he's smiling. He's smiling. He's always smiling. He's always happy. I was happy. He wasn't frustrated by what was out of his control. And he lived such a good, virtuous life, accommodating his real self. What we experience as self-sacrifice as the path to ultimately self-realization, the life of tremendous simcha as well. So, just to conclude with a bracha, with a tefillah, we should all be able to live such a life and enjoy the simcha that follows.